We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you're buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Getting Real with Bossy with your hosts, Kelly Bush.
And Kelly Metris.
How are you today?
Hey, it's a day. I'm not going to lie, though. So I should have been doing stuff today, and I spent 2 hours doing a puzzle because nobody was home, and I didn't have to be, like, physically at work, and I'm feeling super guilty about it, and I know better.
No,
I'm not telling my husband. He had a really crappy day at work, but I spent 2 hours doing a puzzle and it was amazing.
Good for you. You deserve it. You deserve that puzzle day.
2,000 piece puzzle.
Amazing. What is it a puzzle of?
I've got it at Goodwill. So I like to really screw with myself and get used puzzles because then you don't know if you have all the pieces.
It's fun.
So usually if I have a brand new puzzle, I lose pieces anyways between the kids and the cats, and then I just get super stressed out. So this is more of a screw it. I probably don't have all the pieces. And I don't. I definitely do not have all the pieces. But everybody has to have their I need to shut down mode, right? And mine is to clear off the dining room table and put a puzzle out, and whenever I can just stop, I sit down and I work on it.
That's really good. I wish I could do that. My cat would not allow that to be a thing in my house.
Yeah, sometimes my cat gets up and then does the right in front of me with the puzzle pieces just because, like, you're not paying attention to me.
Yeah, my cat would do that, and then my dog would eat the puzzle pieces.
Do you have a thing?
I don't. I used to be just to read. I'm trying to write right now because I want to get a book done by the end of the year. So I think that's just becoming my thing right now, is just to start jotting down notes. But I think I need a better thing. Because it's still work, I think, on some level. And I think I need it to be not work.
I feel like writing stresses me out. Like, I have it in my to-do list to, like, write blogs or work on books or whatever it's going to be. And having it on my to-do list stresses me out.
Well, I did it last night instead of doing work, and I felt guilty about it. So I feel like it's falling into the right... It's right. I feel like it's...
Totally falls in. It falls in. If you feel guilty, like, you should be doing something else, I feel like that falls in. That falls in this category.
Right. Okay. Then it's been okay. So right now it's working.
We are kind of off topic, but I don't think we're super off topic because in our final money series episode, we're going to talk about some exit planning. And I think that my puzzle doing is my daily exit plan.
I think so too.
You need a business exit plan, you need a personal shutdown for a few minutes exit plan.
Absolutely. I'm excited about this, and you guys are going to want to stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Kelly.
And I'm Kelly,
the host of Getting Real with Bossy, the real, raw, and honest podcast about small business ownership. With our experience, 9 businesses in over 25 years, we continue to bear it all and share what we wish we had known.
We move past the must be nices and start getting real. Come along as we interview small business owners and get the true story.
Leave with another tool for the next time you feel alone on this journey.
Today on Getting Real with Bossy, we are getting real about something many business owners avoid until it is too late: selling your business. And our guest is here today to make sure you don't leave money, opportunity, or peace of mind on the table. We're joined by Dr. Ruth Mantrek, a dentist, a business strategist, and founder of Shoreline Strategies, who built a thriving dental practice from scratch, scaled it, streamlined it, and sold it, but not without learning a few hard lessons along the way. When life threw her a curveball, Dr. Ruth cut her hours by nearly half and still grew her business beyond what she expected. That experience led her to design a smarter, simpler way to run a company, and now she helps other business owners do the same through her business Lifestyle by Design and also Prep It to Sell programs, which we're going to talk about today. She is here to share the real talk on what makes a business sellable, the most common mistakes owners make, and how to get ready long before you are ready to walk away. Welcome, Dr. Ruth. And I'm going to say that as much as I can.
Hi. Oh, I'm so happy to be here. This is exciting. I'm so pleased to have this conversation with you.
Intro, we've cleared our schedule for like 4 hours, right? Because apparently we're covering a lot of info today.
It's a lot of territory.
Well, it's such an important topic. We talk about it all the time. You need to have your exit strategy, even if you're not planning on an exit. It is so important. And if the pandemic told us anything, things can change at the drop of a hat, and you need to be business ready to go. And your books need to go. We've talked about that this summer in our business and in our money, our money series. You need to have those books ready to go. And I think this is the perfect end, and we're so glad to have you here today. So thank you so much.
It's really much more than I ever anticipated. I did start my practice from scratch, built it up, and along the way I bought another practice, and then I sold both of them. But the first time around, the offer kind of caught me by surprise. Colleagues that I had known for years wanted to buy my practice, and I thought, oh, this is great. But I didn't think about the transaction from a buyer's point of view. I thought of it strictly from my point of view, and I didn't look at it from the business point of view, because you may have heard about the different stages or phases in business growth, and it starts from, you know, the beginning, and then there's a growth phase, and then there's a plateau, and then there's some scaling that happens, and you want to sell your business when you're in the midst of that scaling process, because your numbers look the best, you know? But what happens in too many businesses is that point in time when your business is really kicking it doesn't happen to be the same time that the owner says, okay, I want to sell. I'm ready to retire, or I'm ready to move on to another project. We tend to think that the business will be ready to sell whenever it is that I have my financial ducks in a row for my retirement, or I'm tired of dealing with clients and customers. And those two dates, you know, when your business is prime revenue to sell and you are ready to get the heck out of there, they hardly ever coincide at the same time. No. And I never even thought about that. There's so many things I didn't think about before I sold. So it was a fine transaction. I stayed for 10 more years after the transaction because I enjoyed the business. It was a fine transaction, but it was so much less than what I was expecting. I was so disappointed. And for those of us entrepreneurs who put our blood, sweat, and tears into a business and then to be disappointed with the outcome, that's a horrible feeling. And I have this mission to make sure that I reach out to as many owners as I can and say, you don't have to, there's a lot you can do to make sure you don't have that disappointment when you get to the table and have your transaction. There's so many extra things. It's not all about revenue. There's so many other things that you can do if you have enough time. You know, you can't wait till the last minute to do some of this stuff. But there's so many ways to make it a better experience for both parties. So that's what I'm very keen on talking about.
what stage would you say you were in when you sold your business?
It caught me by surprise. So I was scaling, but not near the place where I should have been. And actually, the pieces that weren't ready to go had nothing to do with my revenue. Mm-hmm. They were just things that I never considered. And I think that's important for your listeners to know. You don't have to have a gigantic revenue in order to attract a good buyer to look at your business. We have it in our heads that we have to be the biggest or the best in order to attract somebody with enough money to make it worth our while. And that is not the case. I'm just so impressed by some of the clients that I work with and the things they do to make their business attractive to the right kind of buyer. So that, sure, if they're not the biggest revenue on the table, they have other things that are hugely attractive and make them magnetic for a buyer who is looking for something very specific. I didn't think about different kinds of buyers. I mean, because come to think about these different kinds of buyers. One could be a brand new person who's starting out and wants to buy rather than build like a practice or a business from scratch. They're looking for a whole different set of criteria than someone who, I have this name called marauders, for people who just want to cherry pick, like, I want this piece of your equipment and I want this part of your book of business and that's it. The rest I'm just going to pillage and burn, but I'm taking out the things that I want, you know? So that's a whole different mindset in a buyer. There are investors who are looking to diversify their holdings. So they might not be looking for the biggest or the best, but maybe they want your networking or they want your referral partner book. You know, there's all different ways to look at the buyer, what the buyer is interested in. That's a piece that I didn't even consider. I was just looking for another dentist who had the money to pay me for my practice, you know? Mm.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It is. And we never really think about all the different reasons that people want to buy a business or are ready, you know, to add something to their existing business. So one of the first things before we get into my little framework for how to do it is I wish owners to have a conversation with themselves about what do I want? What do I want out of the sale of my business? Do I want, well, in the dental world, you can sell your business and run, or you can sell your business and agree to what we call golden handcuffs, where you stay on for 2 or 3 years and introduce the new doc to, there's not a right or wrong way to do it. It's just whatever makes you comfortable. So I encourage people, that's a non-negotiable for many buyers and or sellers, that like, I only want to work for a year or two, you know, whatever that is, figure those things out ahead of time, because how you set that up really determines a lot about the kind of buyer that's going to be interested in what you have to sell. So deciding what you're going to sell, if you have a brick and mortar, are you going to sell the building to go with the business, or do you want to stay the landlord and rent? These are all, because those are different situations and will have a big effect on your retirement income, or if you're going to use the liquidity to start a new business, it makes a big difference how you're going to handle that. So it's a great conversation to have with your transaction team, your bookkeeper, your CPA, your attorney, what ramifications are there for however you want to set that up. So I like owners to have that conversation before they even look at the four pillars or four parts to the framework I have for just areas that you need to think about way before you want to get your business, before you're ready to put your business to a broker or to someone to sell.
Today's episode is sponsored by Selena's Mexican Restaurant in Rochester, New York. We are proud to continue offering fresh-made, Mexican-inspired recipes that are affordable and served by Rochester's best. Check out our catering menu for groups of 10 to 2,000. Looking for something different to do? Salinas hosts monthly tequila tasting classes, as well as corporate team-building seminars. Check out the website to learn more, salinas.com, S-A-L-E-N-A-S.com. Come in and let us take care of the rest.
So if you want, I'll jump into some of my
before you jump in.
Parts. Yes?
I was just thinking about all the things you were saying, and I was just writing notes. A lot of entrepreneurs start with their passion, right? There are people who are business-minded and go into business ownership mm-hmm. from a different lens, but a lot of entrepreneurs, micro-businesses, go into it for their passion. So you're just looking at today. You're looking at the next couple of years, right? Like, you're not mm-hmm. thinking, at what point do I want out? Like, how long am I going to do this for? Because when you're passionate about it and you're starting, it's exciting. You're going to do it forever. This is what you're going to live off of, right? Your passion's going to pay your bills, and it's a perfect world. So mm-hmm. what do you suggest to the people who are new and starting out? Is this something they should be really... business plans have exit strategies in them, you know, for a reason, but mm-hmm. that's not the part that people like writing. You know, the
sure
passionate entrepreneur is going to be writing all the fluff and mm-hmm. the wonderfulness. How serious do you think people should be getting, and at what point in time, about their plan to sell someday?
The sooner you start getting things set up the way it needs to be in order to be attractive to sell, first of all, it's going to make your business run better. And it's going to give you as the owner a different kind of lifestyle. If you get your business organized enough to sell, your job as the owner, the CEO, is going to be much easier. Because we're passionate, we tend to put our head down and just go, and we mm-hmm. don't notice that, you know, this isn't exactly fun. And you end up selling a job instead of selling a business. And think about it. You may be passionate and ready to work 80 hours a week, but to ask somebody to spend money for an 80-hour-a-week job, it's a whole different. So I encourage people to think about, so this is a little off, but think about, what if you get hit by a truck? You know, what is going to happen to your family? What's going to happen to your employees? So not preparing to sell can be devastating to your team members and to your family. So getting things in order, not keeping it a secret so that everybody is on board, and whatever happens, it doesn't shake up. Because one of the things you have to make sure is, after you sell your business, it still has to function for the new person.
Right.
The buyer has to be able to stand in, and you want your team to stay with them, or you're not going to get paid. You know, it depends on how you set up your payment plan, but a lot of times you only get a certain part of it in the beginning, and then they wait 3 or 4 years to make sure the business still keeps producing before they have to pay the last piece of your payment. So you want to make sure everybody's happy and everybody knows what's going on. There's this idea that you should sell your business, go through the transaction, and don't tell your team about it until after the sale. Very common. I've heard that from I don't know how many business brokers. And that, in certain situations, that's a terrible thing to do. I did that in selling my practice. It was horrible. They fired all of my team members.
Oh.
I had no idea. Because I hadn't all the dumb things I did when I sold my business. But I encourage people, don't make this a surprise for your team members. Have them understand from way back, like 10 years before you're going to sell, say, I'm setting this up so that if I get hit by a truck, you guys can carry this business on with whoever the new owner is. I mean, why keep this a secret? Everybody watches you get old as an owner. They know you're getting older. They know you're going to want to step out. So why make it a secret? Say, let's get this set up so that no matter what happens to me or who is sitting in the driver's seat, this keeps going and your livelihood is secure. That's a much kinder conversation than showing up Monday and saying, guess what I did over the weekend? You know, that's a horrible conversation to have. Yeah. So anyway, that's what I would say is the sooner you get started and get things organized and think about these things I'm going to talk about, it's going to make your business easier to run. And that'll make your life better all those years that you're working toward getting ready to sell it.
And from a behavioral management standpoint, like you want to have those open, hard conversations and let your staff know what's going on so that they can process it before it happens, right? So like they're obviously, well, maybe they would be happy, but most staff is not going to be happy to find out that you're selling. But letting them process that and working through it with you is going to be way better than having it be like, oh, I'm out. You know, and then
depending on the business, you may have a gem in that business that may be the one who could take over that for you, or could be working to be that person who takes over that for you.
It's just a more honest conversation, and I'm talking 10 years. I don't want you to like say, oh, in a year I'm going to sell this, because that's not. But you can make it. You can normalize the sale of a business by having it be part of the culture long before you're ready to sell, so that it's not a scary conversation. It's a conversation we've had before. We normalize that, you know? That just seems, after doing it so wrong, I think that's a much more equitable way to treat the adults that work for you, you know?
For sure.
Yeah. So one of the first things I have people look at is find ways to increase the value of your business, whatever that means. It could mean you need to move to a better facility. It could mean you need to do upkeep. You need to give it curb appeal, you know. But it could mean that you're going to – so here's an example. I had a client who she had a wonderful service that she offered in her business that other companies that did the same thing she did didn't have this service. So she turned the service into a business in a box so that she would teach people how to do it. She could sell it like a business in a box, and she rented it, or it's a franchise. She signed up for the franchise herself so that her own company was paying her franchise for this thing. So when she got around to selling the entire company, she said, well, you can either buy the franchise of this service I have along with my company, or you can just continue to pay me for. So it became a stream of revenue for her. She didn't just lump that into the sale of the whole thing. It's called intellectual property. And we just don't think of all the cool ways we have. We have ways of doing things that are different than anybody else does it. And that's all she did. She took a little service that she came up with. It wasn't anything fancy at all. And not only is it a separate revenue stream, but it attracted buyers because they wanted that in the business that they bought. So I encourage people, I've had somebody put together an onboarding system. You know how you onboard employees? They put together this fabulous onboarding system, boxed it up, and sold it. It's now their intellectual property. So it's become a revenue source for them while they're running their business. And then the new buyer has the opportunity to pay her for it if she wants. If they don't buy it, she's taking it with her.
That's genius.
So just a different way. A different way to look at what you've got, and let's increase the value that I have to offer to the buyer.
I wonder how many people out there literally have multiple businesses within their businesses that they don't even think about. You know, when you're looking at it from a seller's perspective, now you're like, wait a second, I'm doing X, Y, Z, but X, Y, and Z are all separate businesses.
Right.
That's fascinating.
Right. Yeah. So that's just an example of a way to look at what you're doing and how can I increase the value of what I have to offer to the buyer. Okay. The second part would be, how can I decrease the risk that the buyer sees when they look at my business? Buyers are on the lookout for risk. And let me just give you a couple examples of what that looks like. So if you, as the business owner, are what we call the rainmaker, like you're the one that finds most of the clients, you have the networking relationships, you most of the new business comes through you as the owner, you could be in trouble when you try to sell it, because who's going to bring in all the new business when you leave? You know, unless you have a clone that wants to buy your business, they will look at it as a very risky proposition because the rainmaker is leaving. Same thing with your employees. If you have an employee, say in your sales division, who's doing the bulk of your sales, that looks like risk to a buyer, because what if they don't want to stay after the sale? You know, so if your best salesperson gets up and leaves, that's a big risk for the buyer. So I encourage people to look at all the parts of your business. What could possibly be considered a risk by the buyer? You know, it could be a customer who's too big a percentage of your revenue. You know, if you have two or three clients who are 60% of your revenue, wonderful, but not sellable, you know. Mm-hmm. So you need to, and if you're going to try and replace, you know, even half of that with somebody else, you're going to have to do some work. So some of this stuff I'm talking about takes some time. It's not that you can't do it, but it takes some time to generate that kind of relationship with people to either make your team of salespeople better or sort of diversify your referral partners so that you get different kinds of people, so you're more diversified and it doesn't look risky to a buyer. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, because if you have two clients that are bringing in 60% of your revenue and you lose one of them, I mean, mm-hmm. that's a huge chunk. That's a huge risk, yeah. I mean, I could see oh, yay, I got this client. They want me to do all this business. That's fantastic, you know, on the income generating side. But now you're spending all of your time and energy on that one client right. instead of a variety of them.
Mm-hmm. Who may leave with
right.
you.
And, yeah, who might not like the new buyer, you know. So it's just to take a look at your metrics, you know, and figure some of these things out, because for sure a buyer is going to take a magnifying glass to your metrics and dissect everything, you know. And the same thing with who does, I'll call it deliverables, like who out of your employees, who services the most or does the most deliverables. So looking at if you're a service provider, who does most of your providing as far as service goes? You don't want to have one or two people doing the vast majority. Whatever looks risky to a buyer, because those people may walk out when you walk out.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's just taking the moment to think about it before. Mm-hmm. Way before you want to sell. The other thing I encourage people, the third area, would be to look at what is your competitive advantage. Every business has a competitive advantage. You just need to look at it. Because to the buyer looks at your business and says, now why would I buy this business instead of the one next door that does exactly the same thing? How are you different, better, more specialized, more whatever the word is, than your competition? Why would somebody pick your business over another one that does the exact same thing? And I encourage people, why would they pick your business even if it's a smaller revenue than the other business? Because you can certainly make all the other parts of your business very attractive so that it's worth it to a buyer to say, oh, but this is such a great package that comes. I'm going to take this little business with a smaller revenue because it's easier to work with. It functions better. It's got more brand identity. There's a lot of things that can go into that that are worth more in a buyer's eye than just looking at the size of the revenue.
Well, and as a buyer, if you're looking to scale the business, right? So any buyer is going to want to make more money than you're making, I assume anyways, that if you have all those things in place, it's going to be easier for them to get to the next step than a business that doesn't have those things in place. Even if they have a higher revenue, you're going to be spending your time and energy putting all these things in place, which is going to cost money and time.
Right, right. So if you can get them there, if you can get them there faster and easier, that's wonderful. And the part that you have to think about is you have to promote that in your sales transaction, all the work up to it. You have to tell people about all these hidden parts of your business so that they're not just looking at your revenue numbers and saying, that's not what I'm looking for. So you have to turn into a salesman. You have to make sure that your broker or no broker is putting this material out there forward. You're doing a presentation. You are a salesman when it comes to getting your business out there, because a broker's not going to know your business as well as you do, and it's not going to work as hard to make sure you have a good sale as you will. You know? So there's taking a little ownership for what happens, because things like competitive advantage aren't out there screaming and you know, neon lights, look at me. That's a conversation you need to have, you know. So I encourage people, make sure that you really own your competitive advantage and, like, sing it from the hilltops, because there's no other way they're going to find out about it, you know.
Hello, I'm Kelly.
And I'm Don.
Looking for the perfect venue for your next event? We have what you need at the Union Tavern Restaurant and Event Space in Seabreeze.
Whether you're planning a large celebration for up to 120 guests or need a cozy, intimate space, we've got you covered. Check out the Brad Street, our hidden gem speakeasy, perfect for gatherings of up to 20 people.
With reasonable pricing, an exciting and inclusive menu, and no reservation fees for weekday groups, the Union Tavern makes hosting your event easy and affordable.
Celebrate in style right here at the Union Tavern.
Book today at theuniontavernseabreeze.com.
And the last part is something we've kind of talked about already, is you want your business to be turnkey easy to run. This is not the time to try and sell somebody a full-time job. You know, most buyers are not looking for an 80-hour-a-week addition to their crazy life already, you know? So I encourage people to pull yourself out of the day-to-day activities in your business way ahead of time, so your team gets used to being a well-oiled machine without you being there. And that's a terrific track record to show to a buyer to say, look, for the last X number of years, I'm out. I'm not doing day-to-day stuff. I'm not the one pushing this machine forward. It goes on its own. A self-propelled machine is much more attractive to a buyer than one where they're going to have to push and hope and pray that everybody keeps doing their job.
And that's another thing. Yeah, we talk about that a lot, like the delegation, and then when you bring people on, you know, there's some solopreneurs, and that's a different situation, but when you're bringing people on, it's really hard in the beginning to give up some of those responsibilities, and the faster you can do that, and the more streamlined you can do that, the easier that's going to be in the long term to continually pull yourself out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And that's kind of why this whole process of getting your business ready to sell was an incredible offshoot of all the work we do with business owners so that they work fewer hours, which entails doing some of the same things, giving them great systems, and then figuring out how to find and keep high-performing team members and creating a culture that makes people want to work for you. And those are all really important parts if you want a well-oiled machine that will just plug along without you, because that's much more attractive to a buyer than something they have to go in and clean up the systems and hire better people and clean up the culture or work environment, because it's kind of toxic. So these are all considerations that make your life as a business owner much more enjoyable. So why not do that now and enjoy it for the years that you're going to be there working, and knowing that it's going to make it much easier to sell once you do that. And knowing that should you get hit by a truck, your team, team already is good to go. You know, all you have to do is plug in another person to run the show, but they can keep things going. Because if you get hit by a truck, there's a spouse who doesn't know that much about your business, possibly, who all of a sudden has to figure out what to do, you know?
Even in that scenario, I mean, Kelly and I both work with our spouses, but if I get hit by a truck, my husband's going to be preoccupied. So he's the fallback, you know?
Yeah.
So we always talk about, like, I remember having kids and, you know, my husband, they'd be like, well, have Aaron do it. And I'm like, I can't have Aaron do it. He already has a full-time job. You know, we were building the business.
Yeah.
So it was like, he's got a full-time job in the business. I have a full-time job in the business. We're building it. So I'm doing my job with a baby on my chest because there wasn't somebody else to give it to, right? Because your spouse, even if they're with you, and if something bad had happened and we had gotten hit by a truck, it's not like Aaron could have come into work. So now you're out two full-time employees, right? Mm-hmm. So you really have to get up on the delegation and the trusting people to run the place when you're not there. And I hear that all the time when we vacation. Oh, it must be nice. Must be nice that you can leave. I busted my ass to get to the point where I can leave comfortably. Like, we're leaving town.
Yes.
And a week from today, we're leaving town. And we had to get rid of two key employees. And our team is like, I am not worried. You know, everybody's stepping up. They're like, this is fine. We've already got it covered. And those are the moments where you're like, I'm doing something right. Because a lot of times as business owners, we feel like we're doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. But in those moments, you're like,
all the time,
if I can take a vacation and not be terrified, that's a huge, huge step. So
it is. And remember, you guys both are the goose that lays the golden egg. And it's like required that you take care of yourself, because you're no good to the business if you force yourself and drag yourself through all that. In the short term, it works. We've all done it, but it's not a long-term solution, you know? Yeah. And unfortunately, in America, we have this idea that being busy means you're important and it's a good thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a horrible way. I mean, I didn't start my business from scratch and do all of this so that I could have a 80 an hour a week job. It's just not, that was not. And I meet so many business owners who they feel like they have to do that. And I want the world to know you do not have to continue to do that.
Kelly and I were just talking about that. I snuck in a puzzle today. I puzzled for 2 hours before I came to work today, and I felt so guilty about it, and I knew I shouldn't, but it's embedded, and I did it anyways, and it was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
And I'm sharing it with the world, right? Like, we all need to have our things, and if we aren't putting these things in place early, you're not going to have time for self-care. You're not going to have time to take care of your money. You're not going to have time to pay attention to your books, because you're going to be running in circles. So this is an exit strategy, right? But this is also a business strategy. Very early on.
It is.
I just wrote this down about like not being at the restaurant so often just to be seen, because I don't need to be there all the time, because presence is not the same as leadership. You don't need to be there all the same.
That's the quote, Kelly. Presence is not the same as leadership.
I'm writing that down. That is a great one.
Thank you.
Kelly drops a quote in every episode, I think.
Oh, I love it. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
But we do. We just feel. Mm-hmm. Because you're right. In the beginning, we're passionate. Like we would do, I would crawl over rocks to make my business work. You know,
of course,
but no one ever tells you when it's okay to lighten up and let somebody else. You know, and
you know who tells you other women. That's who tells you.
Yeah, yeah, yes, right. And so we need to tell the world, you know, getting organized and not working all the time is what your job. That's your job. Because leadership is a whole different thing. You know, it's not working like we were talked about, working head down in your business. It's a lot of vision. It's a lot of long range planning. And how can you long range plan when you haven't slept properly in days and you are responsible for ordering and watching this and employees aren't showing up on time? All that minutia that has nothing to do with being a business owner or a CEO or a leader in your business. And it's just hard, especially for women, to pull ourselves out and say, I have to stop this part so that I can do that part, because the leadership, the vision part, is hugely important in making my business a long-term success, especially at, like you guys in the restaurant industry. The number of restaurants that come and go in my area is just criminal. They don't have stayability, you know. There are a few old foundation restaurants that are still here, but boy, the track record in restaurants, it's just hard. It's hard to be a moving forward success that's sustainable, you know. So good on you for doing this.
I think it's hard.
More business owners need
to know that. I think the thing that sets restaurants apart from other small businesses when you're starting out in your passion is that in restaurants, you have to immediately have employees. A lot of small businesses can grow naturally and scale naturally, but for people who are passionate about food or chefs or passionate about the industry that don't know how to lead employees, that's a huge undertaking that has nothing to do with food. I always say the restaurant industry, like the restaurant itself, running it, it's so little of it is about the food. I mean, once you have your recipes,
yes,
you're just making the recipes, right? It is managing the 8,000 other things. And if you're not going into it ready to manage a team, and I think that's where the industry has a lower success rate, is because you're immediately taking on employees. And that's not for everybody.
It's a team sport. And why do other industries have permission, so to speak, to do that, to say, I'm the expert, I'm the chef, and I need all these people, and they just go do it. But in the restaurant industry, we just don't have enough bulk or enough margin to make that work. It's so unfair, because it just is, you know? You couldn't work with much smaller margins than you guys have, you know?
No, you just can't.
You can't.
And somebody gets it. Yeah.
Yes,
that's,
I love the
room.
Restaurant. Nobody else has to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, not that I've coached anyway.
Right.
You know, so it is. It's tricky. And I encourage people that if you're that person, if you're the passion and the food behind, to hire someone who is the people person, who is the manager type, who it's worth, because there's fractional everything nowadays.
Yeah.
You can fractionate your way through all those things that a chef or a dentist or whomever might not be good at, you know?
Yeah.
I call it the Henry Ford outlook on business. Henry Ford built an empire, and yet the man didn't graduate from high school. So all he knew, his little corner of expertise, was mechanics. That's it. So he surrounded himself with experts in every other field that he needed: sales, marketing, all the little silos that a business needs. He gave to somebody else. All he focused on was his brilliance. And we lose sight of that because we start as an entrepreneur doing all of it, and we hang on to it too long. And instead of saying, I need an expert in this slot, you know. And thankfully, some of the experts we need can be our kids, you know. Like when I started social media, I just hired my kids because they're way better at it than I am. And I don't even want to learn how to do that, you know. So I don't. And I know that there are only certain things in my business that I should be responsible for. And you just have to get comfortable with having somebody else do that. But it's a scary step for entrepreneurs who, you know, because you're adding a role, someone to pay who's not revenue generating. You know, it's not like hiring a waitress or a bartender.
Well, that's what you need to put all these things in place is someone to do the $10 task so that you can do the big picture task. But even the big picture tasks aren't immediately revenue generating, right? This is a long-term thing, and that's why it's important to not wait until the end because it's going to be so much work. I love this conversation. I think that all of these things for people in the beginning, it's in your business plan. Your template for a business plan includes all of these topics. But we're just going to glaze over them and plug something in to make it look like we thought about it and then never look at it again. Whereas
I know
these things need to be addressed early on to make your life easier. And I'm so happy we had this conversation today.
I just want to just reiterate, just going back to just that first thing, the ways to increase value. I think that's such a scary thing, but these are things you can do that may cost no money. It's increasing your email list, your memberships. If you're doing subscription boxes, turn that in, write your own little business plan about that. Like there's things that you may be doing that can increase your business value that will cost you no dollars. So I think sometimes this conversation is scary because we don't have more money to make more money. There are things that we can do to make our business seem better on paper that are going to cost you. It doesn't have to necessarily be increasing your sales. So I think this is such a great, important conversation because people are not always looking for that huge number. They're looking for those other things. And this is just brilliant. Right. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Ruth,
I'm very pleased.
Dr. Ruth, if someone wanted to hire you, if someone wanted to reach out and talk to you and hire you, how would they reach you?
So we put together a resource for your listeners from this podcast, and if they go to prepitnow.com. They'll get a little checklist of the things that we talked about today.
Oh, amazing.
So they can go there. That's the easiest way. Or they can go to our website, which is shorelinestrategies.com. But I think that if they're interested in this conversation, I think the free resource would be a great place to start.
Love free resources. Wonderful. Thank you for that. Can't wait to go check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. I love what you two provide for your listeners. I've listened to several of your episodes and great content. And I especially love your summer series that you're doing on finances right now. So everybody listen up because they're giving you so much gold in this podcast.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank
Ruth.
You so much. Thank you.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. I never thought I would be talking to Dr. Ruth.
I love Dr. Ruth, both the OG and this one.
Yeah.
And
I
love
agree.
She's wonderful. I love anybody who has hard lessons they've learned the hard way that's willing to share, right?
Agreed.
The things we're learning mid-flight.
And being willing to share that. And I just think, like, people, there are so many things we can do, and I would love those examples. Like, there are so many things we can do to make our business look more profitable that will cost you no dollars or little dollars. Like, you know, obviously making your space look better if you have a space, but you know, like that a subscription box, which I think is kind of what she was alluding to. Like, you can turn that into a business. That becomes a thing that is now attached to your business. That's it can be a separate thing. That's like stuff like that is so genius. I'm thinking like with events, like I could make that like the events that we do. I'm gonna turn that into its own little business now. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean,
my brain is buzzing.
There's so many different things. And on top of it, I mean, there are things that we know we should be doing anyways. We talk about it all the time. You know, they are money-making things. It's just that maybe having another reason to do them will give us the pep in our step we need to follow through.
Ooh, I've got some pep in the step now.
Pep in the step.
I'm going to go out and pep around.
I'm going to pep around. I am ready for a nap, and it's only 3:30, so.
Yeah.
Apparently, my puzzling did me in. I have a full night of work ahead of me.
Oh, me too.
All right, everybody, make sure you're writing that business plan and you're paying attention and actually following through on the things you say you're going to do. Because you need it, your business needs it, your team needs it, and your future self needs it. I love to screw over my future self. Like, oh, next week, Kelly's going to handle this. Oh, next month, Kelly's going to handle that. And then, you know, that time comes and you're like, what the F? Like, shit. I hate last week, Kelly. But this is one of the things that if you set yourself up, you're actually being nice to future you.
That's very true.
Right? Let's be nice to our future selves.
Ooh.
And if we can be nice to our future selves, then we can do more puzzles.
Yes.
Ah, look at that. Full circle. Puzzle.
I love it. All right. Follow us at Bossy Rochester. Email us at bossyrockroc@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Tell us what you think about our summer series talking about money, 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 money.
Be bold.
Be brave.
Be the boss.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.